Foreign Madam and the White Yogi, a verse novel by Chris Mooney Singh, Chapter 2, Episode 3. Each night became her once upon a time, old world quests et du romance. Knights and dragon combat in French rhyme for her two girls in pyjama pants. She spoke of Grandma Mimi, storyteller, upon her crate in Montreal. She was the widow of a sausage seller. Here, Mother Margot would recall a damsel riding on her purple griffin, tracked down by a were-mouse pack, until the knight, such endings hinge upon, launched a candy joust attack. Margot shared more tales from Montreal, their past, a sausage trail from Europe, while Miriam, model mummy, rocked a doll, and Mimsy, track champ, skipped a rope. She told how she was Margot in the middle, on squirrel alert for each tall tale, while both her siblings turned away to fiddle with frilly dolls, not unseen chainmail of lords and ladies, castles, pageantry, troubadours and jongleur tricks. "I recall her well," she says, "your great-grand Mimi, long after her passing at 76. "When will we meet our grandma and our aunties?" moaned Pauline. "Yes, Mummy, when?" "One day soon, I promise, my little pixies, if Papa will help a bit, amen." She prayed to be a Mimi for her girls and grow in them a garden patch more lasting than the scrunchies and kiss curls, a soul life with a roof of thatch. She started to tell her tale of Sir Codswallop. Four hamsters pulled his chariot. Each rainbow wheel was a swirling lollipop, but the sleeping girls had lost the plot. Mimi Mama lived on. She came again, time shifting to that old French landscape with face and voice inside the mind's terrain, helping Margot's life take shape. Margot could not tell the deeper tale of the Lady of Loise, the past life Mimi in her river vale. Some claim she was a witch because the lady lived unwed in rag-patch clothes, collected fungi, herbs and tree bark to store with deadly nightshade and dog rose. Sick mothers went there after dark. Mimi came to Margot, half-ghost, half-dream, when Margot gave a sigh or shrug, inside the bathroom, putting on cold cream, or nodding off, something would tug thoughts back to the hut in the thick wood to touch each tincture on the shelf. Each time she threw back her rough woolen hood, was it Grandma? Was it herself? She did feel Mimi. Or was this just her hubris, claiming vision-polished eyes? Yes, 27 kilometres from Paris, lives still the storyland of wise. Flying to Paris helped her say drop dead to siblings, and soon her tongue was grappling fast with Jean and Jules in bed until her learning pendulum swung full with Flaubert, Hugo, Marcel Proust, Colette, a French canon for love tuition, to her need to nest, not more dumb love roulette. Time for a bow, a first edition. U.S. Airman Benjamin Slaterman she met in the Belgian countryside. Demol from Chèvre's air base, his new plan was now to take a foreign bride. She was Canadian, yet with French candor. He was well stacked, a wall of muscles. Yes, Margot was two geese for his one gander. They married in Bruges to sweet church bells. Then honeymooned a week in Auvers-sur-Oise, walking the streets that Van Gogh painted, and ate alfresco bread and vichyssoise. She secretly hoped to get acquainted with the lady's soul world she had always known, where a past life Mimi had baked bread and told Ben of the one, not witch, not crone, who also whispered in her head. He looked and looked. Was she possessed or mad? Mr. Potato hardened his eyes. Let's get this straight. The lard will mark you bad for sorcery talk. He liked French fries with his Bible Belt mince burger, but on the side. Potatoes should remain potatoes. This taught poor Margot she must always hide soul poetry inside life's prose. For now, neither wanted to go stateside to the Idaho potato patch. As if in the room, Mimi said, "I'll guide." And Atlas helped their mad plan hatch. She flicked it open, wide to the world map, and closed her eyes, no thought of failure. With Grandma Mimi in her thinking cap, her Ouija finger chose Australia. Quite well it started. Brisbane gave them a home. Army Sparky, these electrical fellows find work. Teachers too. High school French all the day. Nightly her M.A. Anthropology. Aboriginal extinct Turrbal. Local Meanjin Brisbane dialect. Good choice, linguist, but not so cool for Big Ben. Way beyond his ken. Two hearts drift, but Margot's won't skip up class. Cocktail bars cool the boredom, he feeds a thirst. Bicep Ben's animal body lays down its bet as a girl magnet. Ferries take Slaterman, chasing after short skirt, redheads, blondes, soft targets, Saturday nights. Margot regrets that she chose a donor's DNA. It must always play. First chance. Old Slaterman dies up on his tractor. Ben hears the call of potatoes in Idaho. Eldest son, his daddy wills him the farm. Goodbye, soldier charm. Crying Margot, a stranded midterm MA, strange in a stranger land, has read the writing. "Don't worry," says Mimi between her dream and waking. "New light is breaking." After class, she'd go to the Bonjour Café, owned and run by Luc and Madeleine. An oasis for French speakers here in Brisbane, people came to meet and greet and parley. A French warship had docked from Vanuatu on exercises. The sailor caps got down, red naval pom-poms bouncing through the town. Some waltzed in while she was eating fondue. Gherkins, olives, bread cubes dipped in cheese. One pom-pom had the cheek to ask if he might taste her melt. She smiled while saying, "Oui." He dipped his finger, not a fork, and quite at ease, sucked it clean with bearded, rosy lips. What a tease, she thought. "Merci beaucoup. Mon nom est Matelot Pierre Giroux," he said, and sat and talked of the sea and ships in urbane French. That made the difference. To speak French again, ah, what a relief. And the sensual undertow, its hidden reef of lurking sex. She soon got off the fence, bringing him home. They made dirty love until he had to rush back to his frigate, promising a rapid figure eight with Navy time done. He'd come from above on a plane next time. After just a year of ardent letters winging to Pierre, he was now sitting in her front room chair. Their affair of Brisbane moved into top gear, speaking Francais until the English class got him low-paid jobs in boiler rooms. They saved some money renting wedding costumes for a civil service, not before stained glass. She was Catholic but marred by a divorce. Pregnant too, she felt they'd overstayed, so made a southern shift to Adelaide, where she took the ESL training course. Those days were hard. Pauline had been born with Adele soon after. Margot worked part-time, while Pierre, the plumber, was less apt to climb up the job ladder, preferring beer and porn while on the World Cup couch. Retreating, she reread her French classics in the bedroom, and now she wondered why her second groom was turning out like Ben. "Or is it me?" she asked herself. The early fizz had gone. Work and babies tired her, while he just sat, not even offering to feed the cat. She saw her pattern, ignoring brain for brawn. Now with left and right jabs, hard upon her, they were channeling the anima of divorce. Pierre trots off, unhitched like a horse. "This marriage is dead," proclaimed the coroner. Margot had been badly knocked about, and her nerves were breakable as glass. Mimi whispered, "Drive to yoga class." She took a long-held breath of deep time out. It grew into a groove, driving to the centre, Wednesday yoga nights, meditation chants. It grew into a practice and social hub, a hangout with Adelaide Hills folks in caravans, the solar cell, mud brick, barter crowd with free-range egg exchange for odd jobs, or trading babysitting hours. As she closed eyes in the Nag Champa incense hall, she saw kaleidoscopes spiralling into forms of elephant Ganesha or Lakshmi, wealth tycoon who spoke in finger mudras and leading Margaret internally to a plane of presences spatial and real as folkies come to chat here over chai. At home, she put up pictures, deifying walls. Her daughters gawk straight up at the elephant-headed fellow, Lakshmi on her lotus of golden jackpot coins, or Hanuman, Mr. Monkey, and Shiva, modelling cobras. "Mummy, who are they?" asked Pauline. Then Adele said, with her hardened eyes, "Mummy, I don't like them." Lacking babysitter, she dragged them to the centre, hoping hearts would spark, then dragged them home in blankets. Meanwhile, Margot taught ESL to Chileans, picked up tetchy girls from the after-school care, came home, cooked and played until the yawning hour. Then free, she twined through yoga, and, as there was no one to share the nights of fog, she turned in, tortoise-like, withdrawing head and senses, then interrogated ghosts of past regrets in marriage, the bile of betrayal, the cuts of loneliness, hoping all might pass. And then they re-met at a dancing chant, the Himalaya Center. He'd come along drumming his merdang. The circle starts. The right foot steps forward, anti-clockwise, a Greek-style sirtos. The men sped up as the singing of the women pushes dance to its Greek peak, and then men sing for them. Vitale, 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 JJ vitale, JJ vitale. All night, she had seen Krishna with the flute, Tom Thumb size, where Yogi drummed, a mini god upon the cylinder. Such things she never talked of. Anthropology drew straws from a fist of speculations. She remembered Joseph Campbell's Masks of God, transcendental metaphor and opened seeing. It came unbidden through some unknown lobe, unlocked as if now hacking in Angkor Wat, a stone face of Vishnu free from the jungle. So why had Krishna come to a yoga hall, dancing to their beat? And the rapture, how? "So nice to see you here," she said at last outside for a chai break under stars, reminding of the play. Still can't forget," he said. "That night was vast." She nodded. "True. It stayed with me. I'm reading a translation." "In French?" he quips. "Or maybe you have mastered Sanskrit in 30 days. "No," she answered. "Just dull English borrowed from the library." This is new, she thought. What's up with him? Ego had kept him from the telephone. He'd liked her so much on that balmy night, but also lost his nerve. She seemed so smart, while he was just a travelling Dharma bum without a job, busking here and there with his guitar. "You played so well tonight. Where did you learn to drum like that?" she asked. "Himalayan Yoga, the Sydney chapter." It seemed a cosmic joke to both land here in New Age Adelaide, town of crystal workshops and past life therapy and pyramids, or had the serendipity kicked in like frequency theory? "And by the way, I never asked how you got your name. Yogi was a final gift from Swami before Mahasamadhi, he answered. The Himalayan guru was still legend, having visited Australia, but now, after a fight for power, the successor sat on the guru's chair in upstate New York, now following more rich and famous money, gave talks in Shaktipat in Hollywood. Well, Yogi suits, she said, but didn't add, perfect for a pony with a beard. So what's your birth name then? She had to ask. Not important, past is past. I started fresh when Swami said, just let go all your ghosts. Quite true, she thought, and waited for a tale. He'd got the name despite his lazy bones. Quite the opposite from her sporty exes. Perhaps it's a message to begin, posed Margaret. It's helping my bad back. I must admit, I'm much more in my head. No excuse, he said, finishing his chai. Then he went the long way round to tell how yogi means someone who yokes the ox of ego and unites the body senses so all can pull together toward the one. A name can help you be the name itself, but you'd know that, Miss M.A., I would guess. She tried to smile, but now his tone was sharp. Something must have shifted since they'd met. She tried to read the pony. Was he freaked by education or the age she didn't feel? Flexing her free hand, seeing the lines, double divorce and single motherhood, were quite enough to live down in this life. Are you going for the training workshop? A national camp was happening in a week interstate. I've booked my place and ticket. I guess I'll see you there. I'm going too. She was glad, but he had crossed his arms protectively. Now their time was up. I have to fetch my darlings from the sitter and Rose. Oh, yeah? He said, getting up abruptly. You have kids. How many? Well, just two. Of course, she would have children. Why this gloom? He was remembering at breakfast the next day in the dowdy house where he had rented a room and was worrying over what more things she'd say. No mention of a man suggests divorce, and handling kids had never been his forte. Her work and settled vibe were there, of course. Does she want a workhorse who will pay? Why are you even thinking there's a trap? The sky is blue, and yet your thoughts are grey. Snap out of it, he told himself. The map unfolds its mile markers along the way. He went outside. Some dog began to yap. Wake up and stop this living life halfway. You've been listening to Foreign Madam and the White Yogi, a verse novel by Chris Mooney Singh. Check out the rest of my works at chrismooneysingh.com. Until next week, bye for now.